I don't think Paul Azinger has a banana putter, but
I don't think he needs a banana putter.
He does
putter.
Not need a banana putter. I'd like to welcome into the show, Paul. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. It's funny that you mentioned that. I used to have a putter that was a hot dog or a hot dog bun.
That's kind of probably what the Chiquita banana putter looks like. But you probably made everything with it, too, and you probably just made everybody aggravated.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I made everything anyway. But, yeah, you're right. You know, it's weird. I won that tour championship with the Thing putter way back in 1992. It looked like a, I don't know if your viewer, your listeners fish, but it looked like a rattle trap fishing lure, almost shaped like a football.
And, it was only as big as the golf ball.
Yeah, I remember Greg Norman walked by me and he goes, what's that? I said, I'm using it. He goes, no way. Yeah, I am.
Using it for what, did he say?
I'm sure
he
used
it. It was a practice tool, really.
I'm sure
the
he
head
used
it. Was so small. Yeah. It was just a big, solid chunk of brass, and I made everything with it.
So let me, I got to ask you this, because we were just talking about this during the break, is you were almost like, I'm going to call you like Gen 2. Because you were, like, kind of the person who brought the belly putter back.
Well, I don't know whoever used the belly putter ahead of me in tournaments. I know Phil Rogers used to practice with it and stuff. But as far as ever putting it in play in an event, I'm almost 100% sure I'm the first person to ever do that. I did it in 1999 at the Tour Championship, and I made a ton of birdies. Sari Pock and I lost in a playoff. And then the first week I used it on tour was 2000, the Hawaiian Open, and I ended up winning by 7 shots with the belly putter. And then every manufacturer started making extended putters that you could put in your belly button, and I kind of fluked on it. I was just putting awful at home, and I walked into the pro shop at my home course, and it was one of those anchored putters that you would put up on your chest, but it was made for somebody who's much shorter than me, and it fit right in my belly button. And I started hitting things all over the pro shop with it. And I took my putter and cut the grip off and shoved a shaft in it and just kind of experimented around until I got the right grip and I got it to fit in my belly button hard and firm enough so that it wouldn't come out, but not so firm that it hurt. And it was really unbelievable. And, you know, of course, the first thing I did was check to see if it was legal in 1999. And they said, yeah, it's legal. There's no rule against it. And I put it in my belly button. And off I went, and I was struggling at the time. I ended up back in the top 20 in the world rankings with it, and I think I led the tour in putting 1 year with it. I don't use it anymore. I haven't used it for about 4 or 5 years, but I think I am the first guy to ever put it in my belly button.
So why did you go away from it then?
Well, you know, if you pay attention when you're watching golf, almost every good putter, and I think almost every great putter for sure, will have the belly or have the handle of the putter, the butt of the putter, pointing at their belly button at address and throughout the entire stroke. And so I just had used it so much that my stroke got to that point. A lot of putters, or, you know, a lot of players, the handle, the butt of the putter will point almost outside their belly button, either on the right side of their body or the left side of their body, depending if they hold on too long or release it too much. If you can just watch your stroke and have the butt of the putter pointing at your belly button throughout the stroke, that's perfect, and it simulated exactly what I had been doing with the thing buried in my belly, but I had better feel with it outside my belly, and that's why I switched away from it.
So ultimately, what do you think is going to happen? Is the USGA and the RNA going to win out and everybody's going to conform, or are we going to have a split?
I believe the RNA and the USGA will stick to their ruling that and ban the anchored putter, and then the PGA Tour will then be forced to make a decision. The Tour in Fincham made the decision to force the RNA and the USGA to make the next move, and I hope I'm wrong. I'd like to see the belly putter stick around and the anchor putter stick around. It's been around for 30 some odd years. It's still difficult to putt that way. Anyone who says it's like cheating and it takes nerves out has never been in a position of nerves and pressure. It makes some players better. It makes some players worse. And it's just another way to putt. But I still believe the USGA and RNA will come together and stick to their guns and ban it, and then the PGA Tour will now be forced to make a decision whether to split the ruling bodies or not. It, you know, a guy like Tim Clark is the best example of a player who's never played a professional round of golf in his life without an anchored putter. And, you know, a lot of grinding and hard work and sweat and hours of practice into developing a technique is going to be taken from him. And at his age, it might, you know, probably end his career. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with it. If a guy's, you know, can make a living doing it that way, you know, let him do it.
Paul, it's Mike Perkey with Global Golf Post. If the tour decides to bifurcate, don't you think that would throw the game into chaos? I mean, there were guys who were using anchored putting strokes, probably wouldn't be able to play in the Masters, and they wouldn't be able to play in the U.S. Open or the British Open. Don't you think the tour has to capitulate and go along with the ruling?
It's going to go one way or the other. Either the tour is going to capitulate, or the player's going to have to just change. And you know, I'm on Twitter, and I get people. I defend the belly putter or the anchored putter for obvious reasons, selfish reasons. But I think that a lot of people just say it's cheating. It looks bad. It's not a stroke. You know, players are professionals. They can adjust. And that's what I think is going to end up happening. I believe the players are going to just have to adjust. I think that the tour will probably take a responsible action and not bifurcate. I just think they're going to go with the ruling body on this. But I'm not 100% sure. I'm not out there every week anymore. I don't know. It's complicated because we're talking about a way a guy earns a nickel. And I've said this before, even with the belly putter, I never made a nickel in my life where I wasn't nervous getting it. And it's because I play golf for a living. It's a performance-based sport. And I performed better for a time with a belly putter, and then I actually performed better without it. So it's going to help some players putt better. Phil Mickelson was far worse with the belly putter. The question really is whether or not the tour is going to make the decision to bifurcate. And I don't think the tour will. I think the tour will go with the ruling bodies in the end. But the decision is going to be on Tim Fincham once the USGA and R&A decide.
And again, we're speaking with PGA Tour great Paul Azinger, former PGA champion. And shift gears a little bit with you. Tom Watson getting another go as Ryder Cup captain. Would you ever do it again if asked?
I lobbied to do it a second time after we won. I think I lobbied a little too late. I wanted to take the flag to Europe.
Right.
You know, having really kind of taken an outside-the-box approach to team building and you know, I just felt like it was easier for the guys to bond in small groups than for 12 guys to bond. Europe has small groups in place automatically because, you know, the Spaniards play together, the Irish play together, the Swedes, you know, even the Englishmen all play together. If there's any kind of a split or crossover, it's two best friends, Irishman Darren Clark and Lee Westwood from England, might play together. I think they have small groups in place. I wanted to take and break the teams into three small groups of four and get them to bond with each other, knowing I'd never take them out. Now that I didn't get that opportunity to go do it again, I don't think that I would do it again unless it was like Tom Watson 15 years later or something, 20 years later. Maybe I would consider it. I talked to Tom the other day and explained to him exactly what I did. He wanted to know why I had wanted four picks instead of two. When simply I let the players pick. I picked Stricker and created three-man teams, and I put the three-man teams together based on their personality types, personalities that would work in the workplace, not based on light games or anything like that. And so when I had nine players, three-man teams, I let each three-man group pick who would fill out their group, and it really got them sold out and bonded. And what I told Tom Watson was I wanted four picks because I was considering four three-man teams, and I was going to let each of the two-man teams pick. I hope that doesn't sound too complicated. So that was my explanation for why I wanted four picks instead of two, because there was a plan. And he's considering going back to two picks, and I just told him, you know, there's really no need to limit yourself like that. You know, you can tell your players you're going to pick the top 12 if you want. You can tell them you're going to pick the top 10 if you want. eight will automatically make it, and the next two if you want to do it that way. I said, but as long as you get four picks, I'd just use them. I would stick with it. Tom, he might surprise you. He might just go with top 12 guys.
Paul,
there was a rationale as to why I did that. It wasn't just willy-nilly, I want more picks. I had a game plan.
Paul, why have the Europeans won so much in the Ryder Cup? What's their secret?
They're more bonded than us. It's an intangible. It's a razor-thin line between winning and losing. Both teams are very close. Europe's caught up. When all of Europe was included, it made it a much more fair match. It used to be just Great Britain and Ireland, and they come over here and play. They're as experienced as we are. I really think they're more bonded by blood. Ireland and England and Spain, they're small countries, and these guys, if you're English, you know, you don't even like the Scots. You don't like the Irish. And if you're Scottish, you don't like the English. But that's why the Englishmen play together, and they're bonded for their country. And the Irishmen play together, and the Spaniards play together, and they're bonded by blood. It's in their heart. It's in our head. We think about it. We want to win. They have that intangible that slides them, I feel, off that razor-thin line between winning and losing on the side of winning. And that intangible, you're always looking for an intangible. So they're difficult to define. But I believe in this scenario, I think the intangible is easy to define. They're bonded by blood in small groups, and they're sold out for each other more so than we are.
And they love to beat Americans, don't they?
Everyone loves to beat Americans, and everyone celebrates. What about, you know, just watching the World Cup baseball or whatever it's called, the
baseball classic,
the Dominican Republic. Yeah. They're questioning whether or not their celebration beating the United States was over the top or not on ESPN. And I'm thinking, you know, anytime you beat the Americans in anything, it's going to be a massive celebration because we are the target and we are the ones to beat, whether it's, you know, politically or, you know, in any category, we're always the ones to beat. America's the target. Tiger's the target. He's the bar. And the Dominican celebration for beating America is understandable because it's hard to beat America. And for Europe to continue to do it at Ryder Cup is incredible that they continue to do that.
Well, Paul, we appreciate you coming on. We're up against the break. And when are we going to see you on TV next? I love to hear your analysis on TV.
I'm going to be at the Masters doing ESPN 3D. If you have a 3D TV, really incredible to watch the Masters in 3D. I'll do all 4 days, and then the first 2 days of the U.S. Open, all 4 days of the British Open, which ESPN's had now for a number of years with Mike Tirico and those guys.
All right, man. Well, appreciate it, and we'll catch up with you later.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul Azinger. Great player, great analyst.